Tonight's installment of Improvised Thoughts with host B.G. Adair was first broadcast in 1994. Improvised Thoughts, music and talk about music with your host B.G. Adair.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is B.G. Adair with Improvised Thoughts, and tonight it is a great pleasure, musically for everybody in the audience, but it's personally and musically for me because I have been a fan of this man for so long, ever since the first time I heard him. My guest this evening is Fred Hirsch. Fred, it's nice to talk to you. You have a new album out. You have a lot of new albums out.
Yeah, as they say, I'm a man with product at the moment.
The one I've been listening to over the weekend is the Fred Hirsch Trio Plays. Coleman, Coltrane, Davis, Ellington, Gillespie, so-and-so, Monk and Shorter and Strayhorn. And this is your trio that you work with all the time, Drew Gress and Tom Rainey.
Yeah. Right. It's a wonderful luxury to...
Oh, it is.
To have a real band, especially in New York, you know, because people, it's so hard, you know, for people to make any kind of commitment to play together. And we were fortunate enough, our last trio album, Dancing in the Dark, got a Grammy nomination for Best Jazz Instrumental Album. And, I think that's really helped people, you know, pay a little more attention to this one. It certainly hasn't hurt my career any. And, and it's nice... you know, to be able to continue the trio and hope that it will keep developing because it's really a wonderful, they're both wonderful musicians and I really enjoy playing with them.
Well, it's a wonderful trio and it's obvious that you all have played together a long time and respect and delight in each other's musicality. You did, on this album, you did, of course, tunes that are famously connected with the people who wrote them.
Yeah.
And in this case, we're going to listen to Moment's Notice by John Coltrane.
To put this record together, I kind of made a list of my composer heroes that I've loved over the years. Because the last trio album was all standards, I felt this would be nice to see what, you know, how using instrumental compositions instead of standards with lyrics would affect how we played. And and in each tune, I tried to find a little what Toots Thielemans calls a signature.
Yeah,
a little angle. In the case of Moment's Notice, we have a couple of odd bars rhythmically thrown in there just to keep us on our toes. So it's a really fun tune to play, and it was a fun project to put together.
Well, it's a fun project to listen to and enjoy, too. This is Fred Hirsch Trio, and we're going to listen to Moment's Notice.
Thank you.
We're talking tonight with Fred Hirsch from New York City. Let's go back a bit and tell the audience a little bit about the early Fred Hirsch. You talked in your liner notes about Oscar Treadwell, and as a matter of fact, he did a nice poem for you on the liner notes called An Acquired Taste on listening to pianist Fred Hirsch. He's famous because of the tunes and Oscar for Treadwell and Oscar T, but you have a more personal reason for being acquainted with him and what influence he had on your life. So let's hear about that.
Yeah, I'm a Midwesterner. I'm from Cincinnati, and Oscar has lived there for many years. I think he sells insurance or something. He is one of the most wonderful speaking voices I've ever heard. He's a wonderful DJ. He's rumored to have 50,000 records.
Wow.
And he's obviously been a passionate jazz fan since probably the 30s or 40s. He was one of the original bebop DJs, and he knew Bird and Monk. And anyway, he used to have a Friday night class that was like a community class. Mm-hmm. Anybody could walk in on Friday nights at the university there, the conservatory. And anybody who wanted to could show up, and each week he would play and talk about a particular musician. And that was the first time I really heard Ornette Coleman. And that was the first time that I really heard people like Herbie Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I heard people like... that was my first introduction to Chet Baker. And he's really informative. And so I feel like I learned a lot of my kind of taste in composers and musicians just from listening to him on the radio and going to his classes. So... this whole record has a kind of Cincinnati connection because there's a wonderful saxophone player there named Jimmy McGarry,
mm-hmm.
who really kind of taught me how to play on the bandstand, and he just passed away this last year. So a lot of these tunes, like Doxy, which we might hear later,
mm-hmm.
I learned pretty much with Jimmy. And I was talking not too long ago to the alto player Bobby Watson,
uh-huh.
who's a few years older than I. I'm 38. I think he's in his early 40s, but we were talking like, you know, we're kind of the last generation of guys who sort of really learned how to play on the bandstand.
Right.
Kind of apprenticed ourselves. You know, I've served all my long apprenticeships in a lot of different bands with a lot of different people. And now we're just kind of, you know, really stepping out as leaders. But we didn't learn jazz at a jazz school or at a summer jazz camp. Not that that's not a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those materials were not available to us. So we had to learn just by listening and mm-hmm. playing and listening some more and getting on the bandstand and getting kicked around a little bit. And I think that's why some of us in Joe Lovano, who's the same age,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's, I think, we all came out of the Midwest, and I think that allowed us to develop a more personal point of view.
I agree. I'm a generation back from you. I'm older than you, but I had the same kind of experience, and I've been bemoaning the fact that my students, for example, when I teach, say, 18, 20-year-olds nowadays, really have no place to do that. They have no bandstand to go and be bad on for a while.
Right. And they don't have mentors.
They don't have mentors, that's right.
I mean, I teach quite a bit here in New York, too, so I try to take over that function as much as I can, but it's not the same as being in a smaller environment with diverse musicians, and also in a small town, a place like Cincinnati. You know, I got to play from the very beginning. I got to, I worked. I played all the time,
sure.
You know. New
sure.
York, you can't do that. So it's sort of a... It's something, it's a way of life, it's a way of learning that may be slipping away, and
mm-hmm.
That's kind of sad. Certainly there are a number of very gifted young musicians, but it's just different. And their knowledge, you know, a lot of them don't go back as historically as far as probably you and I have
mm-hmm.
have done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Earl Hines. I've
right.
listened to, you know, James P. Johnson. I love Errol Garner. I love... a lot of guys who are perhaps less well known. I think a lot of the current crop of pianists seem to kind of begin at maybe Bud Powell, but more likely Herbie Hancock.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel important that the history of the music is, and the breadth of the music, and also there was some great piano playing in the early days. I mean, Fats and Teddy Wilson, and I mean, wonderful piano playing. I think that's part of it too. That's a real important thing for me.
I noticed in your liner notes that when you referred to Miles as being one of your listening to Miles is some of his early things, mm-hmm. that you referred to Wynton Kelly, mm-hmm. and I was struck by that because Wynton Kelly was one of my early influences.
Wynton always sounds, I mean, he's a consummate accompanist. I mean,
yeah,
he comps
yeah.
so beautifully. That's what I loved on Live at the Blackhawk.
Yeah,
was
yeah.
his interplay with Miles. It's just wonderful. And in addition, his rhythmic feel is kind of, it's happy. You know, it's not corny, but it's got a
yeah.
kind of a nice edge to it.
All of his records always sounded like, especially to a piano player anyway, it always sounded to me like this is the way a piano is supposed to sound in a group like this.
It's real clear and direct, and I think, I've been asked who are my favorite pianists,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite a diverse list. I love Ahmad Jamal,
mm-hmm.
The early trios. Every one of those records to me is wonderful, and Paul Blay and Earl Hines and Monk
yeah.
and Bill Evans and Herbie. I mean, those are my heroes, and I think the only thing that they all have in common, two things. One is they each get a very distinctive sound out of the piano, and that's
yeah.
probably the thing that I've tried to get. That I've worked the most on is trying to get the sound that's my sound.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is they're all pretty clear kind of players. Everything's, you know, there's a pretty high level of content. And that's kind of, you know, I never say that I get there all the time, but that's what I'm always shooting for.
Yeah, yeah. I want the audience to hear your recording of Mood Indigo. And again, we're still on the Chesky label album called The Fred Hirsch Trio Plays, and you feature Drew Gress on bass and Tom Rainey on drums, and this is the trio that you've been with quite a long time. This is Duke Ellington's tune, Mood Indigo. Thank you. Mood Indigo, the Fred Hirsch Trio. We're speaking tonight with Fred Hirsch from his home in New York. Fred, you grew up in Cincinnati, so were you a conservatory graduate?
No, I went there briefly. Mm-hmm. I was more interested in hanging out in the jazz clubs.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, my formal music education was at the New England Conservatory in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And I left there, graduated in 1977, and have been in New York, lo, these 17 years. Hard to believe, but
yeah, it is. As I said earlier in the show, my first introduction to you was I think the first time I heard you was with Janis Siegel,
right?
And that wonderful album. And you have, to me, the first several times that I heard you, you have sort of become the piano player of choice for singers, or at least the kind of singers that I like to listen to. And I think you also play with Rosanna Vitro.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did an interview with Rosanna, and I thought I remembered that you were the accompanist on that.
You know, it's funny. I mean, not to start anything. I've never really loved the word accompanist.
It's really more like you're a duo partner.
It's partnering. Yeah. That's my preferred term because I generally don't. Produce and arrange a number of records for vocalists. Mm-hmm. Janis and I have a new record that's going to be coming out, and we'll be probably back on the road sometime in the spring. But that's really a duo.
We appear as
a duo. It's billed as a duo. And I enjoy lyrics. I enjoy singers. But when I can be involved, when I'm working with them and not for them.
Not for them, yeah.
Right.
Not every piano player, I find, really knows quite what to do with a singer,
right?
Or for a singer,
right?
And that seems to come very naturally to you.
Well, yeah, it's probably partially my classical background.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that one of the great challenges in comping for anybody, whether it's Janis Siegel or Joe Henderson or other people I've played with,
mm-hmm.
or Toots Thielemans, is that to me, their sound and the sound that they get from their instrument really affects my sound, and my sound affects theirs. So
I
try to create kind of a little sound world for a vocalist or for a horn player or for even if I'm comping up on a bass solo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fun of it for me, is to, you know, have our sounds kind of mesh and interact. And I do love lyrics. If I ever play a standard, and I play a number of them, I generally know the lyrics or have a sense of the lyrics because you can't really phrase a melody if you don't really know the lyrics. So
that's right.
I guess I'm old-fashioned about that. But.
Well, I think I hear a lot of horn players say that too, at least the horn players that I respect and admire.
Mm-hmm.
Say, you know, you might take a breath in the wrong place if you don't
that's
know
right.
the lyric.
Exactly.
And that's exactly how it works. Well, let's talk about Fred Hirsch as a songwriter so we can lead into your tune Evanescence. You're writing more and more, it sounds like, these days.
Yeah, I've got a number of tunes out there. The record that I did before the last trio album, my first record for Chesky, was called Forward Motion,
mm-hmm.
and that featured a quintet with tenor sax and cello and all my own music. I do write tunes, and I also write other forms,
mm-hmm.
and I love doing it. And many of my tunes, not all of them, but many of them, have dedications, or I will write with a particular player in mind I've written a song that I dedicated to Charlie Hayden, who I've played with a great deal. I wrote a song for Sam Jones, who I used to play with a lot. Sometimes I'll write songs for people that I'm currently playing with. And this tune, Evanescence, I had the title, actually, before I had the tune. For many years, and it's a double-edged sword, I'm not really complaining, but my playing has been put in the kind of Bill Evans ballpark by critics and listeners, and because of my sensibility, maybe, and the kind of tunes that I can play or do play sometimes. And I got kind of, there was a time when I really fought that off. I got kind of sick of it, of being told, you know, oh, you're like Bill Evans. Well, no, I'm not. So I did finally decide to kind of answer the critics, and I made a Bill Evans tribute album called Evanescence. And I did a whole program mostly of Bill's tunes that he had written and tunes that were associated with him. And I figured, well, I'll throw this out there and see what everybody thinks, because I don't really think I sound like Bill. But certainly this tune, though it doesn't sound like Bill, really, in a way, as I said in the notes, I think I'd like to think that it's something that he would have played or would have liked, that it would have reflected his sensibility. And also, it was also designed as a bass feature, because I really realized in my trio repertoire I didn't have a, you know, something that really features the bass playing the melody. So it had a dual purpose.
Well, it's a lovely, lovely tune, and it is precisely the kind of tune that Bill Evans would have sought out, because he loved pretty melodies. And he came up with some obscure, even some pop songs that had wonderful melodies. I'm thinking specifically of the Burt Bacharach, House Is Not a Home. He always could dig out those...
Paul Simon's I Do It For Your Love.
Yeah, yeah. So I think he would have jumped on this tune with both feet. I think you hit the mark, not only as a tribute to him and sort of his sensibility, but just as a tune that stands on its own. It's a lovely song. So let's listen to Fred Hirsch and the trio, Evanescence. Thank you. we've been listening to Evanescence, a wonderful tune written by Fred Hirsch, wonderful pianist who has a new album out called the Fred Hirsch Trio Plays, with Drew Gress on bass and Tom Rainey on drums. We're speaking to Fred tonight from his home in New York. Fred, you have several projects out right now. I wanted to mention also you have a Fred Hirsch at Maybach. Maybach Recital Hall Series Volume 31 on the Concord label is also out now. And you have a new project that you're excited about called the Ballad Album.
Yeah, it's actually the full title is another long title. Is Last Night When We Were Young, the mm-hmm. Ballad Album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a benefit for a wonderful organization here in New York called Classical Action Performing Arts Against AIDS. And it's a collection of ballads that I was able to get all the musicians and studio fees and engineers mm-hmm. and editing and packaging and pressing and everything donated for this
wonderful
fundraiser. And I was able to get the musical help of Phil Woods plays on it, Bobby Watson, George Shearing, Jane Ira Bloom, Gary Burton, Lenny Andrade, wonderful Brazilian singer, Janice Siegel, Mark Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty, if I must say, all-star kind of thing.
That's a formidable lineup there.
Yeah, and everybody played a ballad.
Wow,
that was
great.
The deal. And I play on most of the cuts, not all of them. And I felt, as a musician who is HIV positive myself,
mm-hmm.
that it was important to be outspoken and visible on this issue and to try to do something that's constructive by bringing people together. I'm really very, very proud of it. I'm proud of the performances. Everybody really gave something of themselves. It was very heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt, given my career and the recognition I've been getting lately and the fact that I'm also on a couple of other AIDS benefit projects that are of the classical music variety,
mm-hmm.
Where I contributed compositions and performance. I felt it was important to talk about it and to be hopefully a role model
mm-hmm.
Of somebody who's, you know, being honest and open and dealing with whatever I have to deal with, and to convince people too that, hey, you know, your career can survive your disclosure. Whether you're gay, which I am, or whether you're HIV positive. Actually, my career is going great guns. So,
mm-hmm.
I just feel that it was important to talk about it from a position of strength. You know?
I'm totally overwhelmed at your bravery and everything. I think you're the most wonderful musician. I can't wait to hear the Ballad Album, and we're gonna have that around here. But I have some questions. This was very hard at first. How has this affected your career in terms of not only maybe your day-to-day physical well-being, but have things changed? Has your perspective on things changed regarding your HIV status in terms of your career, what you're going to do, what you your goals?
What's interesting, I found out that I was positive in 1986, so
mm-hmm.
it's been 8 years
it's been
now.
Yeah.
So basically the entire time that I've been leading my own trios and making my own records, I've known this.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly was an impetus initially to go out and want to play and make my own records sooner rather than later. Certainly I think my health is fine. I have no symptoms of anything. I'm completely
mm-hmm.
fine, although I am infected with the virus, and who knows when things may change. But I also think that creatively, it's now that I've, come out in such a big way about this,
mm-hmm.
I was worried about it because I thought, gee, I don't want to be a poster child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take away from my music. I want to talk. I want to be a good example, but I don't want to be, the jazz AIDS guy.
Right.
And
right.
And I think all the things that have been written so far, and I've been really amazed by the number of of interviews I've done, and now there's television talk of doing television things. I've been approached by documentary filmmakers. It's been because there are so few artists, performing artists, who are out of the closet about this.
Right.
And there are also very few out-of-the-closet gay jazz musicians. And I've been doing this for coming out about who I am and what I'm dealing with for the last number of years, I think I would like to think that my playing has become more emotionally rich, mm-hmm. and I hope more honest.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really doing what I want to do right now, and even as a result of all this publicity, I've just signed now with the first really good booking agent I've ever had, and they're not at all
mm-hmm.
put off by my health status. That's not an issue for them. I was worried that it was going to affect bookings and
sure.
That I'd feel like some sort of leper. But the amount of support and letters and calls and things that I've received from people has been amazing, and I think I've made a difference, and I can feel good about that.
Name of the album is Last Night
When We Were Young. The Ballad Album.
I can't wait to hear it. Last Night When We Were Young is on my top five list of favorite ballads.
Well, Mark Murphy does an absolutely heart-wrenching version. We do it as a duo.
Yeah.
And it's really special.
Well, I'm sure it is. I can't wait to hear it. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, the old clock on the wall, as they say in the radio business.
Yep.
And we're going to have to close this down here. But, I want to tell everybody again, I've been talking with Fred Hirsch tonight, a wonderful pianist, a man for all seasons. You have several new projects out, the Fred Hirsch at Maybeck, the Maybeck Recital Hall series on Concord, and your newest one, which we've been listening to, called the Fred Hirsch Trio Plays, and that's on the Chesky label, just out. And we're going to hear one more cut on that one. So, Fred, why don't you set this up for us? We're going to listen to Doxy.
Sonny Rollins has always been one of my great heroes as a saxophone player,
yeah.
as an improviser. And, in fact, I always talk to my piano students, you should listen to Sonny Rollins. That's
yeah.
really what jazz is.
Yeah.
And, Doxy is just it's a little tune that I learned from Jimmy McGarry, but we play it a little slower
mm-hmm.
and perhaps a little bluesier than is normal.
Mm-hmm.
But it has that kind of, it's what I call kind of an after hours feeling.
Yeah, it does.
And I'm real happy with this version. This is the kind of feeling you can't manufacture. You got to be real relaxed, and that's sometimes hard to get in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we got what I was after, and why don't we listen to it?
I think we got what you were after too. And again, Fred, thank you so much for the interview. We'll be going out with Doxy from your new album, and to all in the listening audience, this is BG Adair with Improvised Thoughts saying good night, Fred Hirsch, and God bless you, and keep playing.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good night.
Tonight's encore broadcast of Improvised Thoughts with B.G. Adair and guest Fred Hirsch was first aired in 1994. Since that time, Fred Hirsch has collected 5 more Grammy nominations, released 32 albums as a leader alone, and writes and performs as prolifically as he records. In fact, beginning this Tuesday night, the 18th, he begins a 10-night engagement of both solo and trio performances at the Village Vanguard. Visit fredhirsch.com for more details. Next week, we'll spend an hour with singer Carol Sloan. Join us then. For more information on Improvised Thoughts, the Encore series, visit WMOT.org, click Programs, and then Improvised Thoughts. You'll also find the link to B.G. Adair's website there, too, or visit bgadair.com. Now stay tuned for a couple of songs from the Fred Hirsch recording Last Night When We Were Young, the ballad album.
Thank you. was a star, a song unsung. Life was so new, so real, so right. Ages ago, last night. Today, the world is old. And time grew cold. Where is that star that seemed so bright? Ages, ages ago last night. To think that spring that something so splendid could slip away in one little daybreak. So now let's reminisce and recollect the sound. When we were young. Last